This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, America, or whatever your time zone across this beautiful planet. You are tuned in to the People Speak radio show with Steve Johnson. The People Speak show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. Anyone can participate in the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. That number again, 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of Pal Talk, the largest free chat program in the world, where we have our virtual radio room, the People Speak radio show, that anyone may join to participate in the show. We have an amazing guest on our show tonight. I'm as excited as a frog in a sock, actually. He's a former U.S. Air Force pilot with over 100 combat missions, a commercial pilot for Pan Am and United Airlines for 35 years, and has previously flown on the actual two United airplanes that were supposedly hijacked on 9/11. We are talking tonight to Captain Russ Wittenberg about the sheer impossibility of the official rubbish story about 9/11. Welcome to the People Speak radio show, Captain Wittenberg, sir.
Well, good evening, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
It's amazing to have you, sir. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, but my first question to you, Captain Russ, is how did you get started in the 9/11 truth quest to find out the truth about what really happened?
Well, before we get started, I'd just like to say something here I think we need to get out of the way before we get into the truth. Truth is the truth, even if no one believes it. A lie is a lie, even if everyone believes it. Right is right, even if no one is doing it. And wrong is wrong, even if everyone is doing it. My people perish for lack of the truth. The truth shall set you free. And that's what I think we'd like to cover here tonight, the truth. Even though it may hurt some people, may bother some people, but the truth is the truth.
Absolutely, and the truth will always stand resolute no matter how many lies are thrown at it.
Well, to answer your question, your original question, how did I get started? I've been actually a very active in politics for the last 50-some years, which kind of gives away my age. I'm a retired airline captain from both Pan American World Airways and United Airlines. And I was an Air Force pilot before that. And I've always been interested in what's going on in the world, and I've had a chance to see the world like nobody else has. Very few people have ever had a chance to see. I used to get paid to do that. So I've been most places in the world you'd want to go to and a whole lot that you don't want to go to. So I have I've had a great chance to get around and see what the world is really like. The day moving up quickly to 9/11, like everyone else, a friend of mine called me and he says, turn on your TV. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning where I live. And just in time to see the second airplane hit the South Tower. And from that point on, I thought everything I saw and heard about what they were telling me was just another government false flag operation. The government story has more holes in it than a screen door. And from there, I just never stopped trying to tell people the truth.
Well, you know, sir, a lot of people just simply do not understand the physical limitations that these planes were doing at these speeds, at those certain altitudes. Can you explain to our audience in simple terms about vibrational resonance and why the official story on 9/11 breaks all the laws of flight physics?
Well, the story as it's presented in the 9/11 Commission report, which is an official document prepared by the U.S. government, which has been used to settle legal, financial, and business and insurance claims. For example, just one of the many examples I like to give has the airplanes traveling at about 1,000 feet mean sea level, about 530 statute miles an hour. Now, we don't use statute miles an hour in aviation. We use nautical miles an hour. So if you convert the statute miles per hour to nautical miles an hour, you come up with about 460 knots, as we call them. And then the problem with that, at that altitude, it's about 110 knots over max design limit speed, which the airplane can do at that altitude. If it goes much faster than 350 knots, you get what they call an audible warning, which is called a clacker. And if inasmuch as drag increases the square of the velocity of the airspeed above the best rate of climb speed, which is what we call VY, the drag increases exponentially. And way before you reach 110 knots above your max design limit speed, or VNO, the wings would be coming off, and you have all kinds of high compressor stalls on the engines and a lot of other problems. Aerodynamically speaking, it is absolutely impossible for the government story to be have any real credence of reality.
But surely, sir, haven't NIST and the FAA, haven't they already explained, with all their experts and scientists, haven't they already explained how these planes could have done the sheer impossibility?
Well, they've come up with a lot of spin stories, but, you know, it's all razzle-dazzle and footwork, and so, you know, a lot of the average layman doesn't understand that, you know, the guys who put together the fairy tale of 9/11 were great fairy tale storytellers, but they didn't know their butt about high-speed aviation. And so they didn't have any idea. They just thought making airplanes go really fast was lots of easy to do and fun, and they had no idea what they were talking about.
Do you think because most Americans and most people around the world have been fed a diet of diehard movies and terrorist explosions, that when we saw 9/11, we translated that into it was a movie set? This is not real. This couldn't be happening. Did it seem not real to you when you were watching on 9/11?
Well, it's kind of, you know, almost like when you watch it on TV, it's like watching it a movie, but it was real enough. You know, there's been a lot of discussion among a lot of different groups as to what really happened. And but nobody knows at this point for absolute certainty as to what actually happened. But, you know, we all have a pretty good idea that the government story is full of more holes than a screen door.
So if those planes were doing that speed at that altitude, going into 110 floors of the WTC buildings, why did they not break apart if that was a physical impossibility as far as aeronautics and avionics goes?
Well, they weren't going 530 statute miles an hour. They were well below that because they couldn't go that fast, not in level flight. There was a flight, Egypt Air 990, which was hijacked by the first officer as the captain went back to use the facilities. And he was one of these nutcases who wanted to commit suicide and take everybody on the airplane with him. And he, as the captain left the cockpit, he rolled the airplane over on its back and pushed the throttle straight forward and headed straight for the ocean just off of Canada, just about a few miles off Nova Scotia, and hit the ocean. Now, when they recovered the wreckage of that, they found out due to the flight data recorder that the wing separated from the fuselage way before the airplane hit the ocean surface. So we know for a certainty that if you go so much faster over the max design limit speed of the aircraft, the airframe, the wings will separate.
Some of the turns at Flight 175 were doing, I believe, Dave Bhatia, one of the air traffic controllers for JFK, was saying that these planes could not do these kind of steep dives. Is that possible, that these planes could have done the dives and the turns that they did on 9/11 and still survive? Is that possible at all?
No, it's not possible, because the airliners are not F-16s or F-15 jet fighters. Airliners are built to carry people, baggage, freight, and long distances, and do it cheaply. They're only stressed for 2.5 positive and 1 negative G's. And so when you start exceeding the max design limit speeds of the airframe and the flight envelope, you start pulling G's and making those high-speed turns, you start pulling G's that are well in excess of 2.5 to 3 G's. In the airplane at that speed, due to high-speed buffet, it's called high-speed buffet, and high-speed stall, will start actually falling out of the sky due to G-forces, and the lift point keeps moving further aft on the wings due to the shock waves that are being formed with the air passing over the top, going over to supersonic speeds. And so the airplanes right. cannot go that fast, especially in turns. The turns would make it even worse.
Now, one of the really good documentaries...
I'm not getting too technical here, but you're asking me the question, and that's the only way I can answer it.
Yes, sir. I'm hoping that you're going to be giving me some technical specifics on the answers that I'm asking you. Now, I have watched a really good documentary called 9/11 Taboo, which goes into the flight physics. And if you haven't seen it, by all means, do a search for that. 9/11 Taboo is a fantastic documentary. It describes these passenger jets as basically beer cans with wings, as in they're hollow aluminum tubes. That's all they are. Is that a good analogy to put forward, that one of these commercial airliners is just a beer can with wings?
Well, I didn't see the movie. I'll try to look it up as soon as we hang up here. In essentially, fundamentally, you could call it, that's a very, very fancy beer can with wings, because it's a very well-engineered beer can. But the, like I said, you know, the airliners are built to go from A to B carrying a lot of freight. And if you're not worried, we're not worried about pulling G's, because the passengers don't like that. So the airplanes are only stressed for 2.5 positive G's. And so like when the airplane with Flight 77 allegedly hit the Pentagon, which we now know that it didn't, you know, there's only one hole there. It's about 16 feet in diameter. And as we also know, that the last time I looked, and the last time I flew a 757 has two engines. They're both about 9 feet in diameter, and the fuselage is about 13 feet in diameter. And so the engines are made out of high-grade aluminum, titanium alloys, and you can't make the airplane go fast enough to vaporize that kind of metal. And yet, in all of these crash sites, for example, Shanksville, the Pentagon, you know, North and South Tower, you know, you find very little evidence of aircraft wreckage, especially at the Pentagon and Shanksville. And so the hole at the Pentagon was just one hole, which indicates the air vehicle that hit the Pentagon was probably a single-engine jet vehicle of some type, with probably about a 300-pound high-explosive warhead on.
Wow. Well, okay, but I have seen the pictures of the agents picking up pieces of debris at the Pentagon. Is that not from the flight that we were told that hit the side of the wall?
Well, you really don't know what they were from. It could have been whatever pieces of debris that may have looked like had come from an airliner could have been planted there. Because there, in the Pentagon itself, there weren't any evidence of you know, dead bodies, you know, seats, luggage, you know, landing gears, brakes, engines, et cetera, which over the years, I've seen every time we'd go to training, every 6 months we'd go over the, we'd have a course, investigating the last air crash, if there had been any, since our last investigation. And so we had access to crash sites that were up close and personal, and photos that the general public never got to see, because they wanted us to make sure that we wouldn't make the same mistakes that these guys made. So we studied every crash site. I've studied every crash site for the last, 40, 50 years. And I try to never say never, and I never say always, but I've never seen a crash site, no matter how fast the airplane was going, where there wasn't lots of telltale evidence of the remains of the crashed vehicle that you couldn't tell what it was. Because, for example, you can't make the airplane go fast enough to vaporize the engines and the tires and the landing gear and even the flight data recorders and the cockpit voice recorder. So in that respect, again, the fairy tale tellers that drew up the story of 9/11, especially on the airliners, just flat out didn't know what they were talking about.
Because that was their contention that happened with Flight 77 at the Pentagon, that it basically vaporized. That's why there was no wings. That's why there was no tail section. That's why the big two engines, the 10-ton engines. Now, what happened to the 100 tons of debris from the plane, including the seats and the luggage and the people? What do you think happened? I mean, we were told that it all vaporized.
No, well, of course it didn't vaporize. Actually, what happened on the Pentagon, it looks like, if you go to Pilots for 9/11 Truth, on that, you'll see we have put together on that a very good profile, a flight profile of what we think really happened.
Okay.
It appears as though, now this is kind of a little complicated, but I'll try to make it as simple as possible. When the airplane took off out of Dulles, heading cross country, it had about a little over 10,000 pounds of fuel on board. And the altimeter setting was 3022. Now, that's inches of mercury puts your airplane so many feet above the correct elevation off the altimeter of the elevation of Dulles Airport. And so as the airplane takes off and climbs out on its cruise en route to its assigned cruise altitude, probably flight level 310 or 31 or 33,000 feet, as the crew passes through 18,000 feet, they switch from the local altimeter setting of 3022 or whatever that is to a standard altimeter pressure setting of 2992. So now as the airplane goes up, they get up to there. So everybody's on the same page, so to speak. And as you cross the continent, every time you check in with a new control center, he doesn't have to keep giving you the latest altimeter setting like the controller would have to do on the low altitude airways. So to make sure that everybody's, like I said, is on the same page on altitude. So now here's what happened. According to the government story, is that the airplanes were hijacked once they leveled off with their cruise altitude, and the bad guys took over the airplanes and then turned around, made a 180, and headed back to, say, Washington. Take the flight into Flight 77 that we're talking about, and we'll use that one. As they start down from their altitude, which they hijacked the airplane from, they didn't bother to reset the altimeter to the local altimeter setting. They kept it at 2992. Now, this is using the government story. So what happened, as they come back down through 18,000, the altimeter is reading pressure altitude, not local altimeter settings. And so as the airplane gets closer to its target, that is the Pentagon, these guys go through, first of all, there's no way in God's green earth these guys who had never flown a jet airplane could go through the maneuvers which the air traffic controllers who described this make a 280-degree high-speed turn and hit the Pentagon exactly where they want to, because it just couldn't happen. So what really happened, we think, is that for not resetting the altitude to the local altimeter setting, leaving the altitude at 2992, the airplane actually passed over the Pentagon, and because the flight data recorder records the altitude of the airplane from the barometric pressure, not radar altimeter. And so the flight data recorder was reading the altitude of an airplane that had actually passed over and missed the Pentagon by about 300 feet. But you see, again, that the fairy tale tellers don't understand these little eccentricities that I've been talking about here. It's kind of confusing without having an actual altimeter here to show you what happens when you move the pressure altimeter setting up and down. But they didn't do that. And so if you believe the government story, that's pretty much what happened.
Now, my question to you, sir, is how much knowledge and experience does a person need to even be able to pilot one of these planes? I mean, I've played Microsoft Flight Simulator. I'm sure I could jump in a cockpit. Isn't it the same as flying a single-engine Cessna?
Not really, because you have you're starting out at, say, 33,000, 31,000 feet. Like, for example, I came off of flying as flying captain on 727s, what they call the old steam gauges. And I went I checked out on the 737-300, which had the glass cockpit, we called the glass cockpit with CRTs, cathode ray tubes, and the flight data, the flight management computer. And so we were one of the first companies to get the new flight cockpits. And we went to school, and they didn't have the at the school we went to, they didn't have the little toys that they would use, or the simulators. They hadn't got them in yet. So they said, well, they gave us a book about an inch thick, and they said, well, look, we're sorry, we don't have the simulator here to teach you guys, so read the book. Well, we all got about halfway through it, and we all threw the book down. We said, God, we're never going to learn this thing but reading this book. They said, okay, well, you're going to get in the cockpit, and you're going to learn hands-on. So that's exactly what happened. And for the first few hours in the airplane, you can always go back to standard. You just hit a button, and you go back to your standard, just like it's always been. But to use the flight, the auto flight, and the flight recorders and the flight management computers, it took a while of hands-on actual playing with it in flight before we really understood what was going on. And so these guys would not have a clue, not a clue, as to what was the computer was doing and where they were, vertical navigation, lateral navigation, what the airplane was doing in terms of speed. It's a very slippery airplane at the high altitude speed-wise, and they probably would have crash the airplane well before they got back to Washington. It's kind of like kind of like somebody showing you, say, I'm going to show you how to dress a Christmas turkey, and then turn around and say, okay, now that you've learned how to take care of, dress a Christmas turkey, now go do a heart transplant.
So you're saying it's one thing to learn this stuff in a flight school. It's one thing to learn it in a flight sim, and it's completely different to get behind the wheel and actually fly this thing. Is that what you're contending,
exactly,
sir?
Exactly. Especially when you're under pressure like they supposedly were.
Yeah, and having the U.S. Air Force on their tail and everybody else and NORAD and everyone. Happened to NORAD on 9/11?
The Air Force wasn't on their tail. The Air Force was stood down.
Goodness. What happened there? I mean, was this the biggest single failure in American avionics history?
Well, they were conducting, like most of these false flag operations, and this was one of the granddaddy false flag operations of all time. They were running drills of various, there's about a dozen different drills they were running on. And if you go back and look at some of the old videotapes, and listen to the tapes, they would say, is this a drill or is this real time? The air traffic controllers, who were not in on the scam, didn't know what to believe. They didn't know that this was just a drill, or they didn't know this was for real. Anyways, the Air Force had stood down and had changed the procedures and the orders, just so they would keep the Air Defense Command fighters from getting off the ground and intercepting these planes.
So they were basically stopped from intercepting the planes. Is that what you're contending?
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Goodness me. Now, what happened at Shanksville, Pennsylvania? Did you see the crash site for Flight 93? I mean, you've obviously seen and researched and studied a lot of crash scenes, but all I saw was an empty smoking hole that was being reported as a crash site. Did that make sense to you, sir?
No, I've been talking about, you cannot make, I've never seen a crash site on all the years that I've been studying these crashes where you didn't have a plethora of wreckage of an airplane, regardless of how fast it was going. So the crash site at Shanksville was just a Potomkin Village type of thing. It was just a fake. It was a phony.
Hmm. Now, I've got a question. Is there any way that a novice could fly a plane like that that went into the Pentagon, Flight 77, due to the terrain around the Pentagon and it being protected? Is there any way anybody could have got a plane anywhere near the most defensive, highly secured building in America?
Well, you're asking me two questions there. Is there any okay. way to get the plane near the, yes, near the Pentagon? Yes, if NORAD had been told to stand down and not do anything, that's the way to get the plane there. But the other question you asked me was, is there any way that a novice could fly the airplane the way it was flown? The answer is absolutely positively no.
So you're saying basically the 9/11 Commission and all the findings from all the reports is nothing but a big fairy tale.
It's just a complete whitewash, like the Kennedy Commission report whitewashed the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Lee Harvey Oswald no more shot John F. Kennedy than you and I did. All of these are false flag. Do you know what a false flag operation is?
Absolutely, sir. Yes.
Well, okay. There's been dozens of false flag operations performed, and you can go back to, you know, the sinking of the battleship Maine, and you know, Pearl Harbor was kind of a false flag operation, the attack on the USS Liberty in the Mediterranean, mm-hmm. Eastern Mediterranean, the 1963 Israeli war with Egypt was a false flag operation, and there's been, you know, one false flag after another, and this was one of the This and the attack on the Liberty were probably the two greatest false flag operations of all time.
Would you contend, sir, that 9/11 was basically Operation Northwoods put into fruition?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Northwood would have been another false flag operation if it had gone through completion.
So they basically just changed the scenario, put in a few more planes, and basically did Operation Northwoods on 9/11.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Goodness me. Now, you being a member for Pilots for 9/11 Truth, how have you found being involved in that group over the years? Have you had a lot of support?
Yeah, the guys are based that run it are based in Washington. I live in in Arizona. So the guys out there are doing a lot more work than I was doing in it, but I was the second pilot involved in it at the very beginning. So we've done a lot of really good work on, you know, on peeling this onion thing down to the truth.
Now, I heard you say in an interview once, and I quote, that there was absolutely no possibility that Flight 77 could have descended 7,000 feet in 2 minutes, all the while performing a steep 270-degree bank turn before crashing into the Pentagon's first floor wall. Now, is it possible that a very experienced pilot could have done that turn?
Well, these guys weren't experienced.
But if they now, were,
if he had
if they
practiced,
were...
no, not at those speeds, and not at the speeds which, because like I said, the airplane was exceeding its design envelope.
Oh. Do you believe that there were some suspicious circumstances surrounding the actual pilots of 9/11 and that maybe they didn't actually fly those planes?
Well, there's a lot of talk that the airplanes were actually swapped when they turned off their transponders over Stewart Air Force Base over
okay.
upstate New York. So remember when they turned off their transponders and the air traffic control lost them, lost them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some talk that as the airplanes crossed over Stewart, that they were swapped and the airplanes that actually hit the North and South Tower, for example, were not the airplanes which they say they were. They were, in fact, Air Force tankers. They were under remote control.
How about the black boxes? Is it possible that none of them were ever found for any of the flights? Has that ever happened in flight history?
Well, they found the boxes. So, you see, it's been a while now. They found the boxes for Shanksville, and they found... you cannot make the airplane go fast enough to destroy the orange black boxes. It can't be done. They were designed to take those high G load factors.
So you're saying that they actually did find them and they just didn't report to the public that they found them?
Well, who knows? They lie about everything.
Oh.
What don't they lie about? You know, they lie about the true rate of inflation. They lie about the true unemployment rate, immigration. They lie about, you know, you can keep your doctor if you want your doctor. You can keep your policy if you want. The government has been lying to us, like, for the last 100 years, and you expect to believe a fairy tale like 9/11? 9/11 was a very sophisticated, complicated, technical operation, and it wasn't carried off by a bunch of ragheads living in a cave on the other side of the world.
Mm.
It was an inside job, and it was something which was designed to be used as it was a false flag operation, and they had to run 9/11 so they could do the things which they had been doing under the guise of fighting terrorism ever since 9/11, like passing draconian police state laws, which are unconstitutional, and turning this country into a police state. That was the whole reason for having 9/11. They had to have a cause celeb to do what they're doing. They had to have a reason to sell the American public, because you just can't go out and pass these laws for no reason at all. So they're going to have this phony war on terror. And
This is the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson. We're talking with special guest tonight, Captain Russ Wittenberg, live on internet radio across the world. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
Hi, I'm Richard Bowser. This is the great BBS Radio.
You're listening to the People Speak Radio Show, coming to you live across America and across the world. I'm your host, Steve Johnson. We're back with our guest tonight. He's a former pilot for American Airlines and former U.S. Air Force pilot who's a member for pilotsfor911truth.org. Welcome back there, Captain Wittenberg, sir.
Yeah, I was a captain with United and Pan American World Airways, both. Not American.
Oh, goodness. Oh, I understand. Sorry, sir. Thank you for the clarification. We have a question here from English Rob. He would like to know how untrained Arabs can fly planes into the Pentagon with the gear down at 400 knots, 15 feet from the ground. Can a plane actually do that?
Well, the gear was not down because the gear at that speed, using the government's own story, they couldn't possibly get the gear down at that speed. So, no, the gear was allegedly up. No one ever said the gear was down. But like I said earlier, you cannot get the air. You can't fly the airplane that fast, that low to the ground due to ground effect. So the airplane did not hit the Pentagon. Something else hit the Pentagon. The real airplane that people say they saw flew over the Pentagon, missed it by a couple hundred feet because they didn't reset the altimeter, and that's the reason we know that, because we got the flight data information from the NTSB, Freedom of Information Act. We finally got it. The pilots from 9/11 Truth got the information from the flight data recorder. We put it in a computer, and we put it into a flight simulator, and that's how we got the flight profile, which shows that the airplane never really hit the Pentagon. It flew over the Pentagon and missed it by 300 feet.
Right, right. We have a question from Reggie in Ohio. Captain Wittenberg, you said that the government lies to us about everything, just as they lied to us about Osama bin Laden. Do you believe they've lied to us about Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman?
Absolutely. Why wouldn't they? Pat Tillman played for the Arizona Cardinals, which I watch every Sunday, and he was a great player. And when 9/11 happened, he's a very patriotic guy, and he decided he wanted to go fight the bad guys. And I wanted to get a hold of Pat, but I couldn't, and shake him and tell him, look, it's not the story you're getting is not as it appears. And Pat became a victim as well as a hero.
Mm. We have a question from Buzzy Krongard in Virginia. Do you believe that the high pay of the pilots is causing them not to speak out, with the exception for pilots for 9/11 Truth? Do you believe that a lot of pilots are keeping quiet because of the high pay that they get in their industry?
Well, it's not the high pay it's keeping them quiet. It's the fact that if they do speak out, the government will tell them, they've been told, if you don't accept and toe the party line, they're going to declare you psychologically unfit to fly pilot in command or in an airliner, and they're going to lift your ticket on you, and you're going to be out of a job.
Right, so you'll be excommunicated from the industry.
Well, I'm retired.
We have a question from Blonde in New York. Why isn't this being pursued in court, and are you being called in for an expert witness?
Well, the people who have tried to file lawsuits have been told that they don't have standing to have it, and the government has essentially bought them off with hush money, so that once they're paid $1 million to keep quiet, they can no longer sue the government. So it's a simple matter of that they're not allowed to sue the government, and they just wanted to keep them quiet, so they gave them payoffs to the tune of about $1 million.
Ah, the payoffs. Do you believe that there's payoffs in the FAA that's keeping people quiet about this particular area of flight physics?
I'm sure there's been payoffs of all types, but if you don't pay somebody off, you make all kinds of threats, to your family, the people who have hijacked this country a long time ago, it didn't start with Obama. They play hardball. And, for example, I was listening to one of the radio call-in talk shows who had the D.C. Madam on the show, and this was a D.C. Madam, I'm sure you know who she is, I hope you do, said that she was going to spill all the beans and let all the cats out of the bag in about 30 days, and that she emphasized she had no intention of committing suicide. And before she had a chance to spill all the beans, so to speak, they found her suicided in her mother's barn in Virginia someplace. So these guys do play hardball, just like a lot of people were killed after the Kennedy assassination and so on and so on.
Yes, sir. I have a question from Rob in Hawaii, who says, Lufthansa engineers observed some remote control software on Boeing planes delivered to them that they did not ask for. Do you have any info on this? And could this software have been used to fly the planes remotely?
Yeah, Lufthansa, that's correct. Lufthansa removed those software. And I think that the planes that both the American and the United planes, which were allegedly crashed in the North and South Tower in Shanksville, were substituted. They weren't really, those airplanes were flown off to some other location. Now, I can't give you the location, and I can't tell you what happened to the passengers, but we're quite sure that the airplanes that did hit the North and South Tower were not from American and United Airlines. I have a lot of details now, but I don't want to get into it.
Okay, sure, no problem. We have a question from John in Canada. Do you see personal debt as a form of slavery that prevents people from getting involved in social change?
Personal debt is what?
As a form of slavery that prevents people from getting involved in change.
I mean, listen, we're all debt slaves to the Fed. The Fed is creating all this debt so that we'll never get out of debt. We're up to, $18 trillion on our federal online budget. The offline budget's about $100 trillion. You take in all the derivatives and the debt of state, city, local, county, personal debt, and this country is the poorest country in the world. We've racked up more debt than the world's worth, the entire net worth of the world. So, we're debt slaves, all right, and just a matter of time before this whole thing collapses.
Absolutely. What kind of responses have you had back from people since coming out and speaking up about your experiences and your knowledge of flight avionics? Have you had a lot of feedback from people?
Well, yes and no, because, people are funny. They've only believed what they want to believe. It's like religion and politics. People will only believe what they've been told to believe, and Most people are, you know, the old saying, you can't handle the truth. Well, that's true. Most people can't handle the truth. But we've made a lot of progress since 9/11/01 because at that time, you know, I was saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is not the way it looks. And, of course, I was very well, you know, I wasn't like very much at all at that time. But as time goes on, people can see that things in this country are going very, very wrong, and they don't know what it is, but it's something which people have to start waking up and realizing that their country's been hijacked by a criminal regime, and I don't mean it started with Obama.
Right, right. What about your own personal opinion about 9/11? Do you believe Osama bin Laden organized from a cave to take over these planes and bring these towers down?
Osama bin Laden, all the information I can get, died from a kidney disease in 01, December of 01. He had a bad kidney problem. He needed to have dialysis machines, and he died in the mountains of Tora Bora in 01. And this poor guy that they killed a couple of years ago was kind of like a lookalike. And that story has more holes than a screen door.
We have a question from Love is Light in Ohio. Do you know anything about the so-called Wigner effect that is said to be deteriorating the integrity of older planes? Could the toxicity at 30,000 feet be causing this particular thing called the Wigner effect?
I don't think so. I don't even know that. I never heard of it before.
Okay.
I mean, these airplanes were not that old when they crashed. They were fairly new airplanes.
Right,
so,
right, gotcha.
You know, with the scheduled maintenance, A, B, C, and D inspection cycles, airplanes under 121 subpart H type maintenance programs. I don't think there's any problem.
We have a question from Ken in Mississippi. Captain Wittenberg, are you aware of any military pilots being paid off to cover up the certain facts of 9/11? Are you aware of any of them?
No, I'm not aware of any, but because I don't know of them doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
Sure. And there's no talk in Pilots for 9/11 Truth of anybody who has been paid off?
Well, you know, there's all kinds of stories going around, but I only try to stick to information and that is really credible and can be kind of like held up in a court of law. Otherwise,
only stuff that can be verified. Yeah, you only stick to the stuff that can be verified, right?
Yeah, because there's a lot of people coming up with a lot of crazy stories about what really happened at 9/11. And we think that these are a lot of government plants. You know, they come up with these weird, far-out, off-the-wall stories, and they make fools of themselves. And the whole idea in back of that is to make the real 9/11 truthers who are trying to get the truth out look like a bunch of crazies. And so a lot of these people who come up with these wacko ideas about the airplanes not really hitting the North and South Tower, you know, and holograms and stuff like that. I've never seen anything yet that they produced where they would hold up in a court of law. I think it's just there to make people look good, or they just want a few 15 minutes of fame.
Do you believe the 9/11 truth movement has made any headway in the last 15, 16 years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at first, I mean, I was roundly, ostracized. But now I would say about half of the people think there's, you know, they don't know exactly what happened in 9/11, but they don't believe the government story. So we've made a lot of progress, but unfortunately, it's becoming old history. But it is, in fact, the most important event of the 21st century because of that. That is the cause celeb which our government has used to pass all these draconian police state unconstitutional laws which are taking away our guaranteed freedoms that we have in the Constitution. I suggest everybody get a hold of the Constitution and read it and understand what is in that document, because if you don't know your rights, you don't have any rights. You don't have any rights if you don't know your rights. And they're doing their best
to take away our constitutional guarantees of freedom, for example, like the Second Amendment and things like that.
And, of course, these new laws that are being put in place, they're making sure that we never get these questions answered.
Exactly. So they don't want – they. Don't, I can only get out alternative media like we're on tonight. Do you think that? Do you think for 1 second that, say, Bill O'Reilly would have me on? I don't think so.
I think you'd freak him out. You'd make his head explode for sure. Well, I,
well,
I would
love to be on Bill O'Reilly or any of those other programs because I think O'Reilly likes to over-talk his guests. And I think I've watched O'Reilly enough to know that I think I know how I could handle him. So if he hears this interview, this is a direct challenge to Bill O'Reilly and Fox News. I'd like to come on your program.
Well, I hope Bill O'Reilly heard that because we're sending a challenge out to him right here and live on radio. We got a question from Steve in Australia. Is it possible that an AGM missile, an air-to-ground missile, or even a Granat missile from the Russian stockpile, do you believe that could have been responsible for the hole that was made in the Pentagon C-ring?
Well, it was. We don't know exactly what hit the Pentagon, but we do know what did not hit the Pentagon. It was not Flight 77. See, this whole thing could be solved, and if the government would only just show us the videotape from the closed-circuit TV, which I know there's dozens of cameras. The Pentagon is probably the most closed-circuited TV building in the world, and all they have to do is show us a legitimate image of American Flight 77, a flight, a 757-200 hitting the Pentagon. And if they do that, I will fold up my tent and go home, and I will get on Times Square, and I'll give them 2 weeks to draw a crowd, and I'll kiss everybody in the fanny. But they won't do that because they can't do that. And if they could do that, they would do that because they would make guys like me look like idiots. But they can't do that. And that's the reason they give us, constantly calling us, knuckleheads and tinfoil hat idiots and crazies and stuff like that. Because that's all they could have is to resort to ad hominem attacks. They're a bunch
we
of
have a
phonies
question here.
And they're a bunch of traitors.
Yes, sir. We have a question here from Jane Bond in California. You said earlier in the show the people who took over the country was before Obama. Now, when do you believe the takeover happened? Was it during 9/11, during the JFK assassination, or when specifically do you believe this country has been taken over?
Well, it started back with the advent of private central banking with the House of Rothschild. Have you heard of the Baron von Rothschild who started the Bank of England back in the time of the Napoleonic Wars?
And the signing of Jekyll Island of the Federal Reserve.
That's how far it really goes back.
Right.
So that if you get a hold of a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island by Griffin, the 5th or 6th edition, get the latest edition, you can see that the real problem are the international gangster banksters who are promoting private central banking. And the private central gangster banksters are the ones who are controlling all these manufactured and contrived wars, which we're constantly in fighting. We're fighting in these wars for the banksters because they make money, they finance by both sides, and these are the guys who are constantly getting this country these undeclared, unconstitutional, criminal, insane wars. And all World War I, World War II were manufactured, contrived wars. These wars did not have to happen. Yet they're happening, and all these other wars, they're happening because of a political, economic agenda.
Absolutely. All wars, I believe, are just sacrificial rituals that the bankers like to do to make more money. They like to kill people.
They constantly show these poor guys, wounded veterans, wounded warriors coming back from the Middle East, all these wars, undeclared wars. And they say, let's support the wounded warriors, et cetera. Well, yeah, I'm all for supporting them. Let's stop these insane undeclared wars. Which 9/11 was the reason they had, they wanted to have these wars because wars make them lots of money and it's part of the New World Order. So they can take over and put everybody become debt slaves, like we were talking about earlier. Everybody is a debt slave. The only countries that are not under this private central banking scheme is Russia, China, and Iran. And guess what?
And they're the countries in our spotlight.
Who are constantly being told, we're being told that these are the real bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not a threat to the United States of America. Iran's not a threat. Iraq was not a threat. And yet we have this constant barrage of how bad Putin is and how bad everybody is. And this insane mess you see going on right today in Europe, with all these millions of refugees coming across the Mediterranean, and people, thousands of people drowning in the Med, and now thousands of millions of people hitting Europe and changing the demographics of Europe. This was all planned with this whole thing. This is a long-range planning from these gangster banksters and these people who want to change the demographics of Europe and America. So
absolutely.
That they'll be in constant control, because these people are—they have no concept of limited government or federalism, and all they will—they'll be constantly, when they get these people to the point where they'll be legal to vote, they'll be voting in these one-world governments.
Sir, we have a question from Rim in New York City, New York. Since NORAD had to assume a hijacking had occurred based on the alleged Mohammed Attar transmission, what is the protocol for commercial pilots when dealing with hijackers?
The protocol, well, there's certain protocols. I won't go into it because I don't think they would like me to go into it. But
okay.
I won't get into that. But yes, it's the whole story of the hijacking and how it happened is just ludicrous to the extreme. It's ludicrous, just like the way the buildings came down. It's ludicrous. The whole story is just ludicrous, but all the people know is what they tell them. Look, the vast majority of people that you talk to don't know about WTC number 7, the Solomon Building, coming down at the speed of gravity, its own footprint, at 5:20 in the afternoon. You ask people,
right.
how many buildings collapsed in WTC number 7, 9/11/01? And they think, two. And say, well, you ever heard of the number 7? No. And so you see, it's people are ill-informed and misinformed, and so this is exactly the way they want it when they keep pumping fluoride into the drinking water and dumbing people down.
Sir, we have a question from Screwed in Louisiana, who asks, how much do you think Israel was involved in 9/11?
Well, that's another whole discussion in itself.
okay.
That is a very, very touchy subject that I think that there's a big possibility they may have been involved.
Oh, I like that answer, sir. Well, I can give you some hints, but because, of course, there were over 200 Israelis arrested in connection with 9/11. 60 of them failed polygraph tests to say that they're actually directly involved. There was a company called Urban Moving Systems, of which Dominic Suter was the head and escaped to Israel. There was also Jacoby Alexander, who headed Odigo Instant Messaging Services, that warned, and I tell you right now, that warned 2,000 Hebrew-speaking people. Now, what religion they were, I don't know. They could have been a Hebrew-speaking Hindu, for all I know. But they were warned not to go near New York on the day of September 11, 2001. Now, he escaped. Jacoby Alexander, who held up that software company, he escaped to Israel with $60 million in December of 2001. And he certainly was an Israeli.
Stories like that, I could go on for another hour all night long, but I'll kind of end that question with a question. What country do you think benefited the most from 9/11? And I'll let you
I think that,
you.
That has to be Afghanistan. I've never seen Afghanistan look better than it has lately. I'm being sarcastic, of course. There's only one country that benefited from 9/11, and it certainly was not the United States. It certainly was not the Western countries. It was indeed Israel itself. Now, we're going to have to wrap it up here, sir. I wish we had another hour to talk to you, because it's been fantastic. It's been fascinating talking to you. I really love the answers you've given to us. Thank you very much for being on the show, Captain Russ Wittenberg. We'll have to have you again.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I want to thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Now, thanks very much for everybody for listening in. Join us on the People Speak radio show next time when I talk with Rebecca Roth and her new book, Methodical Deceptions, and with the author and Auntie Kate Howarth about the Australian Stolen Generation. Stay tuned for those interviews coming up soon. I'd like to thank Captain Russ Wittenberg and remind all the listeners to visit his website on www.pilotsfor911truth.org. Big thanks go out to the producers, Mike and Donald, to all my friends throughout the world, and to all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune into my own channel on YouTube called Stop Funding Israel. But for me for now, take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.